Sports Yak.
Oh, my heavens!
One host knows sports.
And who's right there?
The other doesn't know sports, but somehow they meet in the middle. Corey Mann.
Get your big butt out of here!
And Indiana Sports Broadcast Hall of Famer.
This one will be relived.
Chuck Freebie.
Forever!
Do you like sports? Because we like sports. Let's talk about sports. It's Sports Yak. Sports Yak. It's Sports Yak.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that dances like a drunk Cheetah Rivera, it's SIFPA. Welcome to SIFPOP Weekly, streaming live most weekends or available to download later in your podcast feed. Unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
I produced Entourage.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and his past life was as a Viking podcast host. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Skull.
Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. Having her on this week was our Swinito. It's Lo, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Happy to be back.
You may know her as the Curious Lo. You may know her as Lolo. You may know her as Lo. You may know her as many things, but you mostly know her as the amazing person that comes on and talks about traumatic mom movies with us every once in a while.
It is. I was mentioning before the show that I'm either here for traumatic mom movies or I'm here for Lin-Manuel Miranda movies that just so happen to be paired with movies about immortal soldiers or immortal fighters.
Yes. Nice. Nice way to put that together. Last time, I don't know if it was last time you were on. One of the last times.
No,
you were
last
on.
Time I was on, we talked about Pieces of a Woman and something else.
Right. Yeah.
So something it wasn't Old Guard.
But no, the time but before
the
that
time
was
before
Hamilton
that,
and
we
Old Guard.
Introduced Lo to her one of her favorite movies of all time. Does that love continue to this day?
Yep. I was just being an annoying fan on Twitter the other day, bullying Netflix to give us information about the sequel.
So there you go. Lo, it's great to have you back. Thanks for hanging out with us today. We do not have any really traumatic mom movies to talk about, but we do have some Lin-Manuel In the Heights, obviously out in theaters and on HBO Max that we will talk about. And then the Immortals movie that you're talking about is called Infinite, which I think is only available on Paramount Plus. Is that correct? That didn't even go to theaters.
Yep.
So that is available on Paramount Plus. So we'll be talking about both those today. Our best ever challenge this week is best ever in movies, movies that begin with the letters IN. And there are quite a few of them, actually. So it'll be interesting to get into those.
I didn't even make it out of my top 50.
Yeah.
Before I filled up my list. I'm like, wow, apparently movies that start with N are amazing.
Are awesome. That's right. Yeah. They're incredible. We also will, of course, have some buried treasure towards the end as well. I do want to let you know a couple things before we head into our reviews today. Number one, SIFPOP is on Letterboxd. I think I've mentioned that once before, but we were offered I forget what they call them on Letterboxd right now, but they're kind of a version of Pages.
Like a premium membership.
Yeah, yeah. And so SIFPOP is on Letterboxd. So give that a follow. You will see posts of all the articles from the website, our best ever challenges in list form show up there. A whole bunch of different stuff happens there. So if you are interested or already on Letterboxd, go ahead and give SIFPOP a follow. I will say both, I think all three of us actually have Letterboxd accounts as well. So mine's, of course, Aaron Dicer. Andrew, do you remember your Letterboxd account?
It might be Flick Freaks.
Might be. Lo, what's yours?
Mine's The Curious Lo.
Okay. So there you go. So if you want to follow any of us on Letterboxd.
Yep, Flick Freaks.
I had no idea that SIFPOP had an account. I just followed it.
Nice. Very nice. It's kind of been fun. Yeah, they emailed us and said they're still kind of doing the beta on whatever this new thing they're doing with podcasts and, kind of having a more official page kind of thing. And So we were like, sure, yeah, we'll do that. So, check all that out at Letterboxd if you want to. Let's get into the movies, guys. Let's talk a little bit about In the Heights.
It's a story of a block that was disappearing. In un barrio called Washington Heights. The streets were made of music.
I am Usnavian. You probably never heard my name. Reports of my fame are greatly exaggerated.
Morning, Usnavi.
Pan caliente, café con leche.
On these blocks, you can't walk two steps without bumping into someone's big plan.
I'm making moves, I'm making deals, but guess what?
What?
You still ain't got no skills.
In Washington Heights, New York, the scent of warm coffee hangs in the air just outside of the 181st Street subway shop, where a kaleidoscope of dreams rallies a vibrant and tight-knit community. At the intersection of it all is a likable and magnetic bodega owner who hopes, imagines, and sings about a better life. Lin-Manuel Miranda started writing this, I believe, in 1999. This is a project he, in some form or other, has been working on for 2 decades. It came to life first as a play, I believe, and that was kind
2008-ish
of
2008-ish is when
the play
went to Broadway.
Yeah. And that, of course, the success of that allowed him to kind of work with Hamilton and kind of get us to where we are. And so now they are bringing In the Heights to the big screen as well as HBO Max. Lin-Manuel, I think, on Broadway played Usnavi. But it is now played by Anthony Ramos. You've also got like Stephanie Beatrice in there, many, many others.
Jimmy Smits.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure I mentioned Jimmy Smits.
Gotta love Jimmy.
And so I'm curious what you guys thought. Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Lo, you get to kick us off. You're the guest. What did you think?
Love it. They were going to have to work real hard for me to hate it. So,
or even to love not it. Like it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. This is one of my favorite all-time musicals. I'm very familiar with it. So, of course, I had little petty things that are like, oh, they changed this from the musical. Oh, they cut this song. But, like, you know, that's casualties adaptation. So
that is it's great that you have that perspective for, I mean, I don't know about you, Andrew. I just know for myself, I have no familiarity with the, I did a little bit of research into some of that stuff, but you're very familiar with the original.
Yes.
And so you kind of have a little bit more of that insight. So that'll be interesting to hear. Andrew, what about you? Like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
You know me, I'm not a musical guy, so just keep that in mind whenever you hear my review. I loved it.
Whoa!
I really did. This was phenomenal.
Nice.
It's Do the Right Thing, the musical. So
Yeah. I mean, and Do the Right Thing itself has a little bit of a musical kind of vibe to it as well. But yeah, there really is, you know, thematically a lot of parallels to Do the Right Thing and what's going on here. For sure. Yeah. I'm in the loved it camp,
Aaron?
Too. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. Very strong loved it. First time ever, I think I tweeted this, first time ever, I just fired something up again and watched it a second time that had just released. And there are some reasons about that we can get into and talk about. But the main reason is I just loved it so much and I wanted to experience it again. I wanted to experience those characters again. I wanted to experience those songs again. I thought this was absolutely beautiful. Since we all loved it, usually we start with, you know, kind of who enjoys the product the most, but we're all kind of way up there on the scale. Lo, since you kind of have
I'm on the low side of loved it, so
okay.
I'll let you guys. Yeah.
Fair enough.
But still, I loved it.
It's a musical, you loved it.
Coming
That's a win.
From somebody who is self-described not a musical person, that is high praise.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Lo, I'm gonna let you start since you have the most background with it. Tell us some of the things you really loved about it.
Well, I think that first of all, this is a show, much like we were already talking in the Patreon pre-show about Newsies, but much like Newsies, this is a dancer's show. I would say that this is a show that very specifically has a lot of dance breaks that are meant to showcase phenomenal dancing and have these moments of flipping and turning and all this stuff. Granted, I think that has a lot to do with the culture that is being represented in this movie, a culture I obviously, as my pasty self, am not super familiar with. So I think that has something to do with it. But so I love that they didn't get rid of that, because I think sometimes when stuff like this can get transferred to movie, you know, dancing isn't everybody's cup of tea and musicals isn't everybody's cup of tea. So I think sometimes they shy away from that and go more into like, well, how can we create this instrumental moment where normally there would be a dance into, you know, a montage or something else to like keep the audience interested. They didn't shy away from that. And I think that the director, gosh, the name is slipping my mind, John Chu, did a fantastic job of keeping it kinetic and vibrant and just showcasing amazing choreography and dancing. That was like absolutely my favorite part. And I am a dancer. So of course I love dancing. That's going to be something that I go for. I loved like pretty much everyone that they cast. I can't think of anybody that didn't do their job spectacularly. And I'm very familiar with the original cast. So comparing it to that, and everybody just did fantastic.
I specifically will jump off of that and say that Anthony, is it Ramos or Ramos? I think it's Ramos, isn't it?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Apologies if I get
it wrong. We'll say Ramos, and if we're wrong, we're sorry.
Yes, apologies. But I think I just, I don't, I, he is incredible. There is a magnetism to his charisma that I just, he's going to be in a bunch of stuff and it's all going to be awesome. Even if the movie he's in isn't awesome, he's going to be awesome because he just, he has that quality where you're just locked into him as a human being. And I think this is such a perfect role for him. I think, you know, you just feel the warmth and his love, for his love for his idea of his heritage, as well as where he is now, as well as the people around him. I really, really, really liked him in this movie. So I wanted to give props to him before we went any further. Andrew, some thoughts from you?
Yeah. So what I'm going to do some parallels between this and Do the Right Thing, because I do think that they're so similar, not just the New York theme. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I find fascinating about those these two properties is it's so foreign to me. And when I say that, I don't mean just ethnically, because kind of like Lo said, just super pasty white. But I'm talking about growing up in the Ozarks, everything is so spread out and very secluded. Mm-hmm. So seeing a movie like this where the entire premise is to emphasize the tight-knit community element of like what it's like everybody knows everybody, everybody converses with everybody, like your block is your family. I find that to be so fascinating and interesting because it is so foreign to me. So whenever I see something like In the Heights or Do the Right Thing, where you see this, it's like, wow, I'm getting a glimpse into a world that is technically, you know, it's just, you know, it, you could see it in many places, but for me growing up in this area, it's just, it's so fascinating to see.
Yeah, I agree. I'll go ahead and say this now, since we're talking, you've both mentioned, obviously, this is not our ethnicity. And one of the things I love about these movies is the ability to put yourself in the shoes of others. And, you know, I love it when a movie is so very specifically, you know, built for a certain community. And even if I'm not in that community, I get to experience it. I do try, when we do a movie like this, if we don't have, you know, somebody on, to kind of do some research about what other reviewers, writers who are in that community are saying about the movie and kind of how they feel about it. And for the most part, there's a lot of love for it in the community. The only thing that I saw was a few people talking about the lack of representation of more of the Afro-Latina community.
I saw that too.
And that Hollywood has this idea when it is about the Latin community that it's the light-skinned Latin community as opposed to how many come from those islands and those places that are darker skinned. And so I found that interesting. I found that valuable. I think that's valuable to think about, valuable to talk about. And I just want to make sure I'm doing my part to communicate things that I see when I kind of do that research into the movie. And I will say again, for the most part, lots of praise, but that was one thing that several people brought up. So I wanted to kind of bring that out as well. Another thing I want to talk about, and I think, unless you guys are totally opposed, I think I want to do a SIF spoil on this because there are some things I want to talk about that will spoil this movie in the term that we think. So we will be doing a SIF spoil on In the Heights. But another positive I did want to mention was, I'm going to say her name is Olga Meredes, and she plays Abuela.
Abuela Claudia. Everybody needs Abuela Claudia in their life.
Yeah, yeah. She's absolutely incredible in this. I think she is the heartbeat of the entire movie, and absolutely loved her, so I wanted to mention her as well. And Gregory Diaz, the fourth, who plays the... Is it brother or cousin? I think it's cousin.
It's his cousin.
Yeah, and he was so much fun. There's a
Mark
moment...
Random cameo from Mark Antony.
Really? I was later like, oh, you got Mark Antony? Okay, I can't wait for this Mark Antony number to come on. No?
Not in the movie again.
He's great, though. He's great in that scene. Yeah. He's really good. I was going to mention the Sonny moment in the pool is just... There's so much life in his part of... I think it's 96,000... 96,000
G is one of my favorite songs
of
the movie.
It's so great.
It might be,
And one of the reasons, I'll say this now, since we're talking about 96,000, because it was primarily 96,000, I missed a lot watching that the first time. I missed a lot of the lyrics. I was, you know, I've never seen this before. I've never heard this music before. And so I watched, a second time I watched with the captions on, because I really wanted to get a feel for the lyrics and what it was saying, what, you know, what was happening. And it even elevated this song even more, especially during moments like that rap and different things, to really hear some of the cool things that Lin-Manuel is doing with rhymes and phrases. And, you know, it's really interesting. You hear the genesis of Hamilton in this show in bits and pieces. You'll hear a chord progression and you'll be like, oh, that turned into, like, you know, there's a really interesting thing that you know, when somebody kind of has fingerprints on something, and I could hear Lin-Manuel's fingerprints all over this thing. So that was pretty cool. Any other gushing? Any other positives that we want to throw out there?
Yeah.
Okay,
I
could
throw out one. It's very, very rare whenever I'm watching a movie by myself to make an audible noise, excluding, you know, like laughing, you know, for comedy like that.
Yeah.
But there is a moment in this movie that takes place, it's a musical number, obviously, that takes place on a fire escape scaffolding, that when it happened, I audibly went, oh, wow. Like, by myself. Like, when a movie can do something like that, it was pure magic for me. It came out of nowhere, and I just... That might be my favorite part of the entire movie. Just the transition, seeing it, I was like, ooh, like I got goosebumps. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it now.
Nice.
It's just so great. I loved it.
It is great. It is great. It is really cool. It kind of points to probably my least favorite thing about the movie, kind of my only real negative. I wasn't bought into that pair. Benny and Nina in this movie have nothing, like, they're not given a lot to do. Like, I don't know what the resolution to a lot of... Well, Lo has stuff to say. Lo, say stuff. You have stuff to say.
Remember how I mentioned that there were some songs that were cut that I was quite upset about?
Yeah.
Basically, so Nina, again, as somebody who's not part of this culture, like, Nina is definitely the character that I relate to the most.
Mm-hmm.
She goes through a lot of things in this that are things that I've gone through as somebody who moved far away from my family, and those feelings of being so separate from that and feeling like you don't have your community anymore.
And there's a weight on your shoulders. And
exactly. Yeah. I've gone through that. And I remember finding this musical like very soon after I moved, and it crushing me, because Nina's arc is like, it just spoke to me so much into the feelings, and it gave me an outlet to kind of be like, yeah, those are valid feelings to miss this, you know, part of your life, but it's okay. Like, there's a song that was in the movie called When You're Home that's like talking about how, well, you know, your home is kind of your safe place, and then you can go out and you can always come back, and like, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a couple of songs that are cut. One of them is just Nina. It is only Nina. And the other one is another Nina and Benny song. And they also, they basically completely changed their arc. I don't know if this is like getting too off the rails, but.
No. This is helping me, because I genuinely watched the movie and was like, I'm not sure I understand their role in the overall, it hinted at stuff that I never felt like it really paid off.
Like, there's the whole thing with, this is sort of spoiler. There's a moment where Benny loses his job. And in the musical, he blames Nina for it, which you can kind of, as you've watched the musical, you can see why he would blame Nina for that. And they have a rift in the middle of the song, Blackout. And they kind of, for some reason, moved that rift to Usnavi and Vanessa, which there wasn't really one there. They like gave them this random moment of like tension that wasn't really like that wasn't there. It's not like they gave them the same lyrics. It's a different little bit, but so
but you're right. There's a club.
The
there's a club scene where like that did actually feel a little bit forced when you really think about it. That was like a little bit of forced tension.
And that would be the one moment too. Blackout would be the one moment where I would say that they really kind of nerfed the spectacle, because that song is a lot longer in the show, and they cut a lot of moments that were sort of building up to that. The club song and then Blackout, making it more panicky. This is, again, since it's not my culture, I don't know, like, basically in the show, there's like rioting that happens and like people breaking into businesses and stuff like that. And I can see them wanting to be like, you know what, we're bringing this show about like mostly Latin people, and there's already this kind of stereotype of them being, you know, violent and breaking in and like, oh, they're going to riot. I can understand wanting to take that out. So like, I get that. I'm not saying that it was necessarily the worst decision in the world.
Well, what I had read was that they specifically, and you know more because you've seen the original, but that they specifically created more of a story about gentrification, like really focusing on the gentrification as opposed to a lot of the other racial components that the story dug into in the original.
Patrick Page, who plays Pike, who was like the guy who owned the store next door. Mm-hmm. As far as I remember, it has been a hot second since I've actually watched the show. I've mostly listened to the soundtrack, but that character like doesn't exist. That like plot of like half of the store being half of the cap company being sold off first, like that's just like not a thing. The stuff about the Dreamers isn't a thing. Sunny is like much more of a background character. He's there, but he's more like Graffiti Pete, if you even remember that character, who was like there a couple times. He's more like that, where he's just kind of like, you know, he's there doing his thing, being sort of somebody for Usnavi to bounce stuff off of and have a second person there. But like all this, like a lot of the Sunny plot was new, which again, they were trying to go for something that was a little bit more modern. Mm-hmm. I mean, this show is over a decade old, so they were modernizing it, which is great. But in that, I think they lost some of Nina's stuff. And one of Nina's songs is actually a song that's all about Abuela Claudia after something kind of terrible happens. And it gives Abuela Claudia so much more character, and you see even more how much she's the center of this community. I miss it. And again, I understand how they were trying to do some different things, and you know, the Broadway show still exists, the musical soundtrack still exists, so I'm not like super mad about it.
Right.
But, well, you know, we've been talking this whole time about stuff that they cut, you know, from the Broadway to this. This is still a 2.5 hour long movie.
The show is only 2 hours. I don't know how they did that. They, because like it doesn't seem like they added that much, and they cut a few songs and like shortened a few songs. So like
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
It's like longer than the Broadway show.
Did it feel long to you, Andrew?
No, it didn't. It didn't, and that's why whenever we've been talking about, you know, how they cut this song, and they adapted to where this character is more prominent than they initially were. I was looking, I'm like, well, what was the runtime? Cause it didn't seem, but I was shocked cause it, I guess just cause I was so enamored and immersed in this movie that time really didn't affect me at all. But whenever I looked, I was like, oh wow, 2.5 hours. Okay.
Yeah.
So I was wondering how long the actual Broadway was. So, but that's interesting to know that's actually shorter than the movie itself.
Yeah,
I think also one of the ways that they sort of, and again, I don't want to say padded because that has kind of like a negative connotation, but just, you know, they added some more
expanded context.
Usnavi telling the story to the children on the beach is like not a thing.
Right.
They kind of use that to replace some of the fourth wall breaks to the audience.
Oh, nice. Interesting.
So it makes sense for a movie. I think that they could have gotten away with just having him sing to camera, but
you know, it's really amazing that that's not part of the, I mean, it's not, it makes sense that it's not part of the Broadway show, but it is such a crucial part of the movie.
It's the narrative element that ties everything together.
Right. Yeah. In the movie it is. Yeah.
Are we going into negatives yet? Or
I already kind of did my negatives.
Yeah, I've mentioned I didn't feel as invested in some of the side characters as I thought I was supposed to be. That's my only real negative.
Yeah, I have a couple. One of them is that from the beginning of this movie, we're told that Washington Heights is this magical place made of music and everybody loves it and stuff like that. But I think that there's too much in this movie of people either trying to get out or people trying to, reconcile with the fact that they feel like they're stuck there, you know, and I get that, you know, there's going to be an element to this movie, and this isn't spoilerish, but there's going to be an element where people realize, oh, maybe the thing that I was trying to run away from, you know, it's here all along. It's a cliche, you know. But I think that there was way too much of people, like, a negative connotation to this particular block or borough that, you know, you're like, okay, but where's the magic, you know? For 2.5 hours, people are dissing on this place that I'm supposed to be falling in love with. I forgot what the other negative was.
I don't know, Andrew. I feel like that's kind of the point. I feel like that's exactly what the movie is doing, is saying, oh, this thing you know all the negatives of. It's almost like a marriage, right? Like, you know all of your partner's negatives, and you live with them or whatever, and then you realize, yeah, but I love this place. I love, you know, despite its faults.
And it's the cliche, but you have to show me what I guess what I'm saying is I understand the cliche of, you know, you hate something, but as soon as it's gone, you realize that you loved it. You know, it's a trope. But what I'm saying is I don't think that the movie did enough to show me the things that were lovable about it. Granted, I think that, you know, it's supposed to be the community as a whole and the people, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe it's a super nitpick for a movie that I love.
Well, I will tell you for me what it is. And it didn't lock for me until the big number that kind of goes into it. I think Carnival. There's a number called Carnival. That's where it locked for me. Because it was just this real beautiful, like, not just are we a community in unity, we also have our separate individual identities as well. You know, like, we're communities within a community in many ways too. So it really, it, for me, it locked in that it's the people, it's the community, it's the life we're living together, you know, and, you know, say its name so it doesn't disappear, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah. We haven't really talked about something that I just thought was really funny just off the top of my head, that Stephanie Beatrice, who we all know is Rosa Diaz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, is this happy, bubbly, giddy character in this movie, and I'm like, that's not the Rosa Diaz.
She got
to
use her real voice. When she talks in interviews, she's like so bubbly and excited all the time. Yeah. She's so different than Rosa. I love it.
I'm just waiting for her to pull out a Rambo knife and like threaten somebody with it, but nope. Not this.
A change that Stephanie. I loved, although it was subtle, is that we got a little tiny bit of LGBT rep, which is not in the show, of Carla, Stephanie Beatrice's character, and Daniela being a lesbian couple. And I was like, heck yes. Like,
I didn't even notice that.
It was pretty background. In the opening scene, they like wake up in the same bed and kind of like kiss each other as they're getting up. They also dance together a couple times. And there's like a very background. Yeah, I mean, they're fairly background characters, but...
Yeah. It's not something the movie is putting like way out there as part of the themes or anything like that. It's just that's who, you know, these people are.
That's who they are.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. My one last thing is I love how much original language is in this movie and unsubtitled. I love how much Spanish is going on here. I believe it's Spanish, at least for the most part. You know, in the songs, it's so cool. There's this moment in one of the songs where Sonny and the main character's name just slipped my mind.
Usnavi.
I can't believe I would forget that name. Sonny and Usnavi have this moment in the middle of the song where like segue, and it's like the Spanish word for segue, and basically just means like go on. And it's so cool. And I'm just like, I want to use that word in my day-to-day life. And it's just like, I love that kind of stuff. There's an entire song that's based on a Spanish phrase. What was it? But it basically means like, don't tell me that.
No me diga.
Yeah, no me diga. I love that stuff. And it's not just in the songs. The characters themselves will speak Spanish interspersed with their English. And it gave it this next level of authenticity. And again, the ability to put yourself in a world that you don't exist in for me. I don't know. I really appreciated that. I love that kind of stuff. So I wanted to mention that.
Yeah. When the Sun Goes Down, which is the Fire Escape Scaffolding song, 96,000. And whenever Benny, Corey Hawkins, does the traffic report, those are like my three favorite musical numbers.
Yeah.
Of the whole movie.
Lo, did you have anything else you want to say before we head on?
Nah, I've talked enough. I loved it. I have my nitpicks again because I'm very familiar with the musical.
Right.
But truly, I feel like this is an amazing adaptation. Yeah.
I think a lot of us we're all saving something for spoiler talk.
Yes.
Yeah, I have some things to talk about for spoilers.
Yes, there is still some stuff to talk about in the SIF spoil, so we will get there. But for now, let's move on to Infinite.
Evan McCauley. Diagnosed with schizophrenia at 14. After carving the words, look inside, into your chest with a box cutter. Look inside. Why those words?
For Evan McCauley, skills he has never learned and memories of places he has never visited haunt his daily life. Self-medicated and on the brink of a mental breakdown, Evan is sought by a secret group that call themselves the Old Guard. I mean Infinites, revealing to him that his memories may be real, but they are from multiple past lives. This is Mark Wahlberg, Infinite movie that Paramount loves so much, they put it on streaming only. I have to be careful because Disney's doing the same thing to Pixar movies. Like, those aren't going to theaters either. So this is on Paramount Plus. Oh, you know what we did? Okay, now listen. This rarely happens, but it's happening right now. I'm going back to In the Heights for just a second.
Okay.
There is a post-credit scene, just so you know. There is a post-credit scene that is valuable and important, and I really enjoyed.
Oh, dang it. I didn't see it.
All right. On to Infinite.
Because normally whenever on a HBO or like Netflix or anything, whenever there is a post-credit scene, the whole like a skip or
up next, yeah.
You know, up next thing. Yeah, that popped up for me, so that's weird. Is it at the very end or is it like a mid-credit scene?
It's at the very end. We can talk about it in SIF spoil.
SIF spoil, yeah.
Highly spoilery. I mean, it would ruin the whole movie.
Ruin the whole movie. The whole movie depends on this scene.
I think you're lying.
All right, let's talk about it. The Infinite is so good, we'd rather keep talking about In the Heights. Let's go with like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay. Andrew, you get to start this time.
I'm really close to hating it, but I'm just going to go with really didn't like it.
Okay. Lo?
Oh, I hated it. I'm not scared.
Andrew, on the low side of didn't like it, is going to go first because I hated this movie too.
Okay. I want to preface this then because I was kind of okay with this movie until like the last 30 minutes.
Boy, does it get really dumb.
It gets so dumb in the last 30 minutes of this movie that I'm like, I can't. This is so stupid. The last 30 minutes are atrociously bad. But I was interested enough because, okay, so how long is this movie? Like an hour and a half? The first hour is pure exhibition, and then the last 30 minutes is just wasted garbage.
Yeah. Exposition, not exhibition. Just in case you're expecting like stripping.
That's 2 weeks in a row. I've done that. That's 2 weeks in a row. I've done that. Exposition and exposition.
Yes, yeah.
Exhibition. But no, it's all exposition for like an hour. Like they keep introducing new rules and new people, and I'm like, when are you gonna show me the movie?
Yeah.
And the thing is, I know we're not even doing pros because I don't even know if anybody has any.
I have two things that I think were done well.
Yeah, it wasn't Mark Wahlberg's performance,
it was not.
I'll tell you that. No, that guy can't act.
I don't think he can act.
I've seen
he's good
some
in some
things.
Stuff.
Boogie Nights is like it, but like I haven't seen anything where he's not.
He's
Mark
great
Wahlberg.
In comedies, though. I like him in comedies. That. I think he's really funny. But maybe that's just me. But yeah.
Yeah, it's It's a premise that is so simple, yet they feel like they have to explain it to us over and over again for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And they show us
get it.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing is shown. It's all told. It's all told.
Yeah.
In terrible ADR voiceover.
I forget his name, but the whole O'Brien character.
Dylan O'Brien.
He's Treadway.
Yes.
Yeah, Dylan O'Brien. Which, by the way, if you're going to name a character, don't name him Heinrich, you know? I mean, it's like one step away from naming your character Adolf. You know, you just don't do it. You know, it's... this movie, it wanted to be Old Guard so bad.
I'm going to sidestep that because I'll just rant about all of the similarities to Old Guard and all the ways that Old Guard did it better, but I agree.
I do have a pro.
All right.
I do have one pro for
What's
this
your
movie.
Pro? Let's be positive. I mean, a lot of people put
pros.
A lot of hard work into this movie, you know, and
That's
we want to respect that.
Yeah. CGI is really bad in this movie. But the one pro I have is there's a character in this movie played by Liz Carr. Her name is Garrick.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the one who was in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
She has a scene with Chiwetel Ejiofor where they're going back and forth, you know, debating the ethicness or the... I just made up a word, guys.
Good job.
but she has a line where she says, "I'm not the crippled one. You're the crippled one." And it was just that back and forth between the two of them. I'm like, why can't the movie be more of this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's more of a philosophical conundrum as opposed to one character having a personal grudge that has this character, Chiwetel Ejiofor's character, has a quarrel with something that he is carrying around the quote unquote cure to his problems with him. But he's not implementing it.
Yeah.
There are so many plot holes in this movie that it's laughably, like, bad. And that's even before you get to the last half hour.
It's bad. Lo, say something good. Say some good stuff.
The sets were really good. And I know that sounds like a cop-out, but I think that there's quite a few sets that are, like, brilliantly dressed and, like, very interesting
Beautiful.
To look at. I also think that... For what I think this movie was trying to do, the fight choreography was good. It wasn't a Kingsman, it wasn't an Old Guard where they were like going for super heightened choreography most of the time. But the stuff that they had I thought was fun. I could follow, you know, it wasn't like super shaky cam. There's a fight scene that takes place in a plane that I was like, ooh, I love it. He's like slowly cutting away straps. It felt like a video game boss battle where you're like, you can see like there's like a visual representation of the progress in the fight, which I liked. That's it.
You know, I always give a couple points for concept. I do think there's a little bit of an interesting concept here if it's handled differently. And it's not just that they handle their concept wrong, they handle the world building wrong. And I think if you build a different world around this concept, I think you could come away with something very compelling and
this is Antoine Fuqua.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
What?
I don't know.
If you would have told me this is Michael Bay or Yul Bol, I would have got it. But this is Training Day and Magnificent Seven, which is a halfway decent Western.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's done really good Southpaw. The guy's done really good stuff. This isn't him.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and I will say it's I do think it is important to say I was kind of kidding and also kind of not when all three of us really dislike something this much. I do think it is important to say there are lots of factors that go into why things fail, and you know, like everybody could be looking around and going, "What happened?" You know, like it's. And I'm not saying there weren't signs. You know, Chris Evans was originally supposed to be the Mark Wahlberg role, and he stepped out, and Wahlberg replaced him. So maybe he had a premonition from a past life that he was where he was in a movie like this, and didn't want that again. The only other positive I would throw out there is Jason Mantzoukas, who I think is having the most fun in the movie.
Okay,
and
I'll give him that. I was about to be like, do not say that he gave a good performance.
It's not what I'm saying. Okay. But what I'm saying is his performance fits in a different kind of movie that this movie, I think, could have been and been a little more fun.
Yeah, I can see that.
So I, you know, I did want to single him out.
I mean, it's not that far of a step up to be good from this.
Look, I'm trying. I'm just okay, trying, Aaron, guys. I'm just trying.
You did bring up something. As somebody who's been on several major motion picture sets before, like in like production shooting and stuff, it is a miracle that any movie gets made.
Total
because
miracle.
You see hundreds and hundreds of people walking around, and that's not even in post, you know, like whenever you're doing editing or anything like that. Whenever you're just there on set and you see everybody trying to run around and do everything, it's a miracle any movie turns out as good as it does. You have to have a well, you know.
You know, there's
a well-trained crew.
There's a bit of the buck stops here with the director. I get that, but every bad movie is not the complete fault of its director. Every bad performance is not the complete fault of the actor. You know, there are just so many people who determine what shows up on screen, and this, in my opinion, and in the opinion of all of us, is a bad movie. But that doesn't mean anybody here was doing terrible work. It just means that the recipe did not come together. And there are probably many reasons for that. Many, many different reasons for that. Yes. How much more do we want to trash this movie before we move on?
I want to say something.
Yeah.
Okay, do it.
There's a Sophie Cookson, who is the female lead in this, or female, like the main female actress in this, she is just purely sexualized for a character that is not supposed to have a romantic relationship with your lead. Like,
they were standing nose to nose
so many
times, and I was like, is there going to be a weird, like, I kept thinking that there was going to be a bait and switch as to the identity of Mark Wahlberg's character because of how much I felt like they were playing up an attraction to each other.
That's what I mean about the world build. Like, there's so many ways to take this concept and do some really interesting things with this, and this movie chose none of them. And
thought of another positive. There is something that was revealed quite late. It has to do with Dylan O'Brien's character. There's like a single scene that he's in, and there's something that's revealed about that, like, much later in the movie. I'm trying not to spoil this movie that people are totally going to watch now that we trashed it.
We will not be doing a SIFT spoil, so feel free to walk around it.
We see him healing himself, you know, like having a little moment of trying to like, sets something up. And I personally did not see that coming until the end. I felt very much like there was a setup and a payoff. There is another thing that has to do with Mark Wahlberg sustaining an injury, that there was a setup and a payoff of sort of like, hey, we've set something up. And they were both things that, you know, this was trying to be like a blockbuster fun action movie. So it's not like I was like super paying attention and maybe some people would have figured these out. But both of those things surprised me, and in a way that I was like, oh, yeah. They did set this up earlier, and now they're paying it off. Maybe that was just me, but for me, it worked. I'm reaching for positives here.
No, you're good. The only problem with that first thing is it makes no sense.
Of course it doesn't.
This movie makes no sense. How in the world would they not know? In what universe that has this kind of technology do they not know that first reveal? Somebody has to go back in time and tell them, oh, this is what... Come on. Like, it was just, this movie got so dumb at the end. Like, just like, please don't pay attention to anything but the flashing lights. Like, don't think about stuff because it's gonna fall apart.
There's a motorcycle jump in this movie, and that is the exact moment that this movie went from
that it jumps.
Okay,
the shark.
I'm not really invested.
Was there
in
a shark underneath the motorcycle?
To just utter garbage.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on. We don't need to trash it too much. Again, that is Infinite, any more than we have already. That is Infinite on Paramount Plus, if you want to check it out. I don't know if that's on the free version or not, because I subscribe. So, okay, so that is on the subscription. All right, before we head into our best ever challenge, a reminder, if you would like to support what goes on here at SIFT Pop, we'd appreciate it. Keeps us going, keeps the website going. We do a weekly bonus podcast for our members who give $5 a month or more. And you have your own little podcast feed. By the way, that podcast feed also doesn't have ads in it. So that's all yours at patreon.com/siftpop. We also have a monthly family meeting where we do a just kind of a call together, a video conference together, and hang out and talk about whatever you want to talk about. You can check out what level that is at the Patreon and check out all the stuff there. Again, that is patreon.com/siftpop. Thank you so much to our SiftPop members who keep this podcast going. It's really humbling to know that you throw a couple bucks our way every single month. Means a lot to us. So thank you for that. And again, if you're interested, patreon.com/siftpop.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we're moving on to the best ever challenge. Woo-hoo. This week, best ever in movies. Movies that start with the letters IN. I did put a note in the email that we are dismissing articles in this one. And what I mean by that is no articles included. So The Incredibles does not count. That has a the in front. So because there are so many of these, we didn't want to kind of give away too many of them. So let's see. Has to start with the letters I and N. We'll go from number 5 to number 1. If you have it higher, feel free to trump it low.
Yes.
Why don't you kick us off? What's your number 5?
My number 5 is 1994's Interview with the Vampire.
Oh, I didn't even have that in my honorable mentions.
It's
In other words, Aaron hates
I hate this movie. No.
Oh,
no, I
you
will
know,
tell you this.
It's one of those movies that like you either love it or you hate it. So like, fair enough.
No. No, well, I sorry to contradict you, but I don't have strong opinions on this movie. But okay. but what I was going to say is because there are so many great ones, I really didn't even go into one, like movies I like. Like everything even in my honorable mentions are movies I love. So
same. Yeah, it's like this is all things I adore.
Yeah. So talk about the Interview with the Vampire.
I mean, it's one of the most quintessential vampire stories in fiction. Certainly of at least the more modern vampires, like if you're getting away from Nosferatu and Dracula, Interview with a Vampire and the book series that it's based on. There have been multiple movies, some better than others, that have come out based on the book series. And this one is, I think, so fantastic. And there's a lot of great acting in it. And it's compelling. It's like... like juicy and interesting, and I love some of the ways that this changed a lot of things for vampire fiction moving forward from this point, both the movie and the books that they're based on. I just think that overall it's just a really solid, fun movie. If you aren't familiar with it, starts Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, Antonio Banderas, a very young Kirsten Dunst being an adorable and absolutely deadly little vampire girl. it's a very interesting and unique look at vampires, I think. That might seem cliche in retrospect because so many things have kind of like been based or inspired by it.
Most people probably just need Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, did you know Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt did a movie starring together? Here it is. But yeah, good call. I'll go next. My number 5 may get trumped, probably will get trumped. I had Inside Man, at number 5. I love this movie.
It was my first honorable mention. So,
just the fact that I have this at number 5 should tell you, how, full this category is, because I love this movie.
It's the best heist movie ever.
It is, I'm not sure if I would say that, but it's definitely close for me. It's my favorite.
I know you love Ocean's 11.
I really do.
But I think this is, okay, it's the best practical heist movie.
I think it's so supremely well executed. I think it is Spike Lee's best. It's my favorite film of Spike Lee. I wouldn't say it's his best film. You know, we already talked about
Do the Right Thing
earlier, and I think that's a better movie than this in many regards. But this is my favorite to watch, and I really enjoy it. I think the performances in it are absolutely incredible. Denzel's at the top of his game. This is really great stuff. So if by chance you haven't seen Inside Man, don't look anything up on it. Just go watch it, rent it, wherever. I don't even know if it's streaming, whatever, and just watch it because it's great.
I don't know. But I echo everything. None of my honorable mentions, I think, like what Aaron said, made it out of my top 100 movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Inside Man is supremely good. It is what I think is... I love Heat, guys. I think Heat is like such a fun movie, but I think that this is a better heist movie than Heat.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a better movie than Heat. Well, yeah. I think that Inside Man is a better movie than Heat, but it's close. That's high praise.
If you got your Peacock free trial so that you could watch The Amazing Infinite, apparently Inside Man is also on Peacock Premium. So yeah. There you go. Yeah. Oh, wait, no, that was Paramount Plus. Never mind. The Inside Man is on Peacock. So there you go.
Yeah.
Andrew, right. What do you got at your number five?
So I'm going to go with a French movie called Intouchables. This is a spectacular movie. It's about a young man who is an older gentleman who is a quadriplegic who is very wealthy. And he gets a new caretaker who is somebody who is a young black man who is so unfamiliar with the world that this older gentleman is from. And, like, seeing how they learn from each other, like, how they can, you know, take knowledge from, like, one coming from a very rough upbringing and how that's made him stronger and how... you know, one being, you know, paralyzed and how that has made him stronger, you know, and they learn and they grow and you see what started off with a little bit of frustration and a hint of animosity blossoms into a beautiful friendship. The score of this movie is just out of this world. It's so good. It's, I forget the gentleman's name, but there's a song in this called Una Mattina, and if I look it up, it's Ludovico Einaudi is the name of the score gentleman. It's just a beautiful movie. I absolutely love it.
This was remade recently with Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston, I believe,
which is not good.
Not as good as this is what I've heard. So I actually haven't watched.
Have
this.
You seen?
No, this
you...
is on my on my list of shame. So
Obviously, I highly recommend it. So.
Yeah, very there nice. All right, let's do our number fours. Lo, what do you got?
My number four, I would be highly surprised if this is on any of your... It just doesn't strike me as the type of movie that you guys will be like, yeah, it's amazing, but In Bruges is my number four.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, I love
really?
In Bruges.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
another movie that like some people really don't like, so I'm always like wary about like talking about it because it's like... It's a movie. It's a very heavy...
You have to know who you're recommending
yes,
this movie
yeah.
to.
Oh, for sure. Martin McDonagh went on to get more attention with Three Billboards. But this is a better movie in my opinion. In fact, this is the only Martin McDonagh movie I really enjoy.
I like all of his movies.
Yeah.
I like this, Seven Psychopaths. I don't know if Pillow Man was ever adapted to a movie or not, but I would like Pillow Man.
But you've got it on your list, Lo, so keep talking about it. Yeah.
I mean, it's like a dark fantasy movie, but like still realistic somehow. It's there's a lot of talk about morality while still mm-hmm. having some kind of off the wall comedy moments that don't feel out of place. The dialogue in this movie is just fantastic. There's a lot of really mm-hmm. witty
so
back
funny.
And forths between a lot of the main cast. And it's a movie that has a lot of like setup and payoff that works really well. And like the way that the movie ends is just spectacular. And there's some stuff about like purgatory. And like it just goes into some places that you don't expect from this movie that if you just watch the trailer, you think, well, it's about some like hitmen that are hiding out after a job. Like that's what you think going in. Which is true, mm-hmm. but that's so barely scratching the surface. Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson are both absolutely remarkable in this movie.
Ray Fiennes.
There's a bunch of Harry Potter alums in this.
My parents actually last year went to Bruges and saw everything.
Oh, that's fun.
They saw The Swan.
Yeah, I like it as well. In Bruges also streaming on Peacock. So if you want to check it out, you can go there.
If you're somebody out there who says that Colin Farrell can't act, they need to watch this movie because the inner turmoil that he goes through in this entire movie and just his entire character arc is just, it's incredible how good he is in this movie. It's a movie that demands a lot from its lead actor, and he delivers.
I mean, if you're a person who says Colin Farrell can't act, I mean, there are several places I could direct you to squash that view, but In Bruges is definitely one of them. He's pretty great.
And funnily enough, I only saw this movie for the first time about 6 months ago, and it very quickly became one of my, easily top 100 movies.
Nice.
Yeah. I get it. It's in mine, so
my number four, a little bit of cheesy fun. This is where I have Independence Day.
Trump.
Oh, ooh. Very nice. Andrew, what do you got at number four?
Actually, remember, I had Independence Day as a buried treasure because I rewatched it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. My number four, this is where I have Inglourious Basterds. Is this getting Trump by any
No, I have my honorable mentions.
I've never seen it.
Okay.
It's on my list of shame.
Do you like Tarantino?
I do like Tarantino, but I am also it's definitely one of those movies that I feel like I have to be in the right mood to watch, and I've just never been thinking about it and been in a mood that I've been I want to see this high action. This is how I think of it, this high action but probably pretty bloody movie. So I'm I got to be prepared.
Yeah, they're not wrong.
There's definitely scenes that I would say are extremely bloody, but it's a movie that is. And maybe Aaron would disagree with this. It's a movie that's very difficult to put into a singular category because there are scenes of this movie that are just ridiculous and so funny. And then there's scenes, probably one of the most famous scenes of this movie is the scene in the underground bar, which is one of the most anxiety-inducing, tense, stressful scenes in cinema history. And then there's just scenes like the bear Jew, which is like just hard to watch scenes. So it's a movie that is funny, exciting, anxiety inducing. It's difficult to just put in one category. Great performances. I think that this is just a brilliant movie. So
I agree.
And it's kind of unlike a lot of Tarantino's earlier movies too.
Until Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it was my favorite Tarantino. There you go.
Yep.
That is apparently not streaming anywhere. I meant to mention The Untouchables is streaming on Netflix. If you want to check out The Untouchables,
The Untouchables or Untouchables? I thought it was Untouchables.
I think it is technically The Untouchables, but
Then I broke my own rule. I can bump up. What would
Inside
have been,
Man? Yeah. Inside Man is now your number five.
Yeah.
I think technically it is The Untouchables. I wasn't going to say anything, and then I accidentally did. My bad. All right, on to our number threes, correct? Lo, what do you got at your number three?
I have my favorite Christopher Nolan movie, Inception.
Going to be Trump.
All right.
Going to be Trump. My number three. Also might be Trumped. I don't know. My number three is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Trumped.
Wait, you said Last Crusade?
I did say Last Crusade.
Trump. Because
technically the first one is Raiders. So unless you had Temple of Doom higher than...
Or
than
Kingdom Last of the Crystal Skull. Come on.
Hey, sorry. I'm not sure what that movie you're talking about is, but we will have none of that. All right, then Andrew, your number three.
This might get trumped. Interstellar.
It's in my honorable mentions.
On my honorable mentions as well. In my honorable mentions as well.
I was actually going back and forth because I'm redoing my top 100 movies of all time list. I'm redoing the order, making sure everything's in its proper place.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I think Interstellar is a better movie than Inception. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There are definitely scenes in Interstellar that hit me harder on an emotional, make me just bawl than anything in an Inception. But I think as far as execution of such a difficult concept to explain. I think that Inception is just like, there will never be another movie like it. Yeah. You know, Interstellar, you have, you know, people going into outer space to try and save the world. I mean, that's not that extreme of a concept. Sorry, it's not that extreme of a concept, but the execution and the relativity of time and stuff, that's really what sets Interstellar apart from other space movies. But I think Inception is, I think it might be a better movie. I'm talking about Inception a lot when I'm supposed to be talking about Interstellar. yeah, the score, Hans Zimmer's score in this movie is so grandiose. I guess I really can't think of any other word. If you go and I recommend a lot of people, after they watch the movie, obviously, go on YouTube and watch the Hans Zimmer's the making of the score for this movie. It's him going to, I think, some chapel in a, it's either London or Germany, I can't remember where, but it has like the world's largest organ.
Ooh.
And that's what he used to do the score. Fun. For this movie.
That's fantastic.
And apparently all Christopher Nolan told him whenever he was making the score for this movie, he said, "I want you to score a movie for me. It's about the love between a father and son."
Mm-hmm.
That's all he gave him. He didn't even tell him it was a space movie or anything, which is interesting because Interstellar isn't really the story of a father and son. It's a father and daughter,
mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, which, yeah.
Well, one of the things whenever I love
McConaughey
about it
is like watching the decades worth of messages.
Mm-hmm.
It gets me every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This movie's great. It's absolutely great. And I need to watch it again, and it might jump up my list. It is in my top 200 of all time. But you know, it's just, like I said, I think I only had one movie in my honorable mentions that's not in my top 200 of all time. Like every movie in here is one that's on my best of all time list that I'm talking about. So, and Interstellar is on that list because it's great.
Yeah,
it's absolutely great.
And it's part of the Matt Damon random cameo universe.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So number twos now.
Time for our number twos. Lo, what do you got?
This is where I have Independence Day.
All righty. I had it at number four. Lo had it at number two.
Yep.
Before we go into that, I will mention Interstellar is not streaming anywhere. You can rent it. Tell us about your love for Independence Day.
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I was a bit of a disaster movie junkie as a kid. And in my opinion, this is the quintessential disaster movie. I'm almost positive that I have put this on a past best ever challenge on this show. Like,
could be.
I feel like I've talked about
it's
it before.
A good movie.
I watch it every year on the 4th of July. It is, I think they always cite it as kind of like the first blockbuster or one of the first like summer blockbusters.
The grandiose epic.
Yeah, like they always talk about it like that. And I've probably seen it every year, maybe even multiple times a year since 1996. Like, it is just that important of a movie to me. I think it's over the top and fun and a spectacular visual thing to watch, but then it doesn't slack on the emotion and the heart of the movie. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Oh, so good.
I love it. It's
this
on my list. Yeah.
96. This came out in 96?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was 10 when it came out, and I remember the scene where they're at Area 51 and the alien woke up and like attacked everybody and there was smoke in the room. I was so scared, I was begging my dad to leave. But he was like, no. My dad wasn't one of those like, oh yeah, we can go, you know. He's like, he's a tough it up kind of a guy, you know, suck it up. But yeah.
It's
Bill
so
Pullman's
good.
Bill Pullman's Independence Day speech at the end is one of the best speeches of any movie ever. Mm-hmm. So,
I've told the story many times. Touring with a choir, we were touring over Independence Day weekend, and on Independence Day, we got in the bus that morning and we're heading to the next place. And I asked if I could say something to everybody on the intercom of the bus, and I just gave the whole Independence Day speech on the bus before we took off for our next trip.
How old were you?
Did somebody in the front row give you that overly exaggerated salute?
About
of
how
course,
old were you when you did this?
This was college, this would have, you know, I would have been like 20, probably 19 or 20. So yeah. At that point, the movie was like, you know, 3 years old. So, you know, it was like 2 or 3 years old at that point. But yeah, Will Smith, just absolute charisma on the screen, absolutely owns it. Goldblum is so much fun, man. In this movie. It is just, I mean, it was over from the moment the White House blew up in the Super Bowl commercial. Like, it was just like everybody was going to see this movie, and everybody did, and it was so much fun. I kind of miss big scale disaster movies. It's one of the reasons I kind of praise Greenland from this past year. It kind of brought me back to that nostalgia for, you know, kind of those bigger budget disaster movies. So, but yeah, Independence Day is definitely worth talking about in this category. Let's see. So that's my number two then?
Yes.
Yep.
This is where I have Inception. Am I still trumped?
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
All right, Andrew, what do you have at number two?
Well, this is probably going to get trumped. This is where I have Last Crusade. Yeah.
Aren't we having fun?
We all have like the same movies, just in different order.
No, I'm the only one with a unique number one. Not that it's a surprise and not that everybody can't guess it, but yeah. But yes. All right, Lo, tell us about Last Crusade.
We get to talk about it right now.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade came out the year I was born. It's been just one of the movies that I've grown up watching. I'm obviously a huge fan of Harrison Ford. I'm also a very big fan of Sean Connery. I've been a big 007 fan my whole life, so there's that whole history there. And I like, to me, it is the indisputable best Indiana Jones movie. It's one of the best adventure movies of all time. It's a perfect movie to me. I can't find negatives with it.
Yeah.
I don't have much to add. I kind of agree with everything you just said. You know, I think it's telling that we all had it on our list. You know, I had it at number three, Andrew had it at number two, and you had it at number one. Is it all of our favorite Indiana Jones movies? We all like it more than Raiders. Mm-hmm. I know that to some people is controversial, but I think it's just a more fun movie. I could just watch it over and over and over again. It's just a lot of fun.
Here's why I like Last Crusade the most, and it has to do with Sean Connery. It's because with the first two Indiana Jones movies, we see Harrison Ford's character as this larger than life, untouchable, you know, hero. But in Last Crusade, when you're dealing with his father who continuously calls him Junior and points out the flaws in his life and his shortcomings, it humanizes Indy on a level to that adds somehow dread that, okay, this guy that I've been watching for these past two movies is human, so he could fail. And that's really what makes Last Crusade stand out the most. And of course, you know, the ending of this movie with all the trials to get to the Holy Grail is just...
It's great.
I can't think of... It's the best.
I would say that it gives the feeling that the opening of Raiders gives with all of those classic, the ball rolling, mm-hmm. the darts and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you get the addition of it actually being the climax to the movie. So you've got a lot more mm-hmm. emotion behind it. Also, I think for me personally, because I grew up quite religious, I always loved the fact that it was taking a lot of this like religious iconography and like working it into the different like the traps and stuff, like the kneel before God mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff. And obviously that is in Raiders, but I just think that it's better, like more like weaved into the whole story in this movie than it is in Raiders. So I just, like that always captured me as well.
Well, with Raiders and the Holy Grail, the Grail is more of something like it's in and of itself. Whereas the search for the Holy Grail, I mean, the Ten Commandments and Raiders is what I meant. You know, the commandments and the Ark is in and of itself an item, you know, and everybody wants the item. I think in the Holy Grail, the search for the Holy Grail made it not only a search for an item, but a search for within yourself. Mm. You know, you're finding, you know, the kneel before God, you know, the leap of faith, you know, they're not only testing, you know, what you're willing to go to find the Grail, but it's also testing what you know and believe about yourself. They're all tests of the self.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
It's an okay movie. I guess I could.
It's good. It's so good. And it's such the themes are so consistent. The father-son, so you talk about father-son movie, like, you know, the themes of becoming, you know, and passing on things for generations and, you know, wanting better things for, your kids, and even right down to how it ends with, you know, basically they both have to teach each other the same lesson at the end, yeah. Which is, you know, it's just, it's really beautiful. What a great movie. What a great movie. Yep. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
What is this elusive number one movie? Well, I will say none of us are able to guess.
I will say before we get there, Last Crusade is streaming on Paramount Plus.
Oh, nice.
If you want to check that out. All right. Yes, fine. My number one is Infinite, the movie we watched this week. No, it is not. It is Inside Out.
It's in my honorable mentions.
Surprise, surprise. I love this movie. I don't know that I need to talk about it a ton. I've talked about it plenty. I just think it's such a beautiful exploration of our own inner conflict, our own ability to understand emotion, how it plays a role in our lives, you know, seen through the eyes of, you know, this girl who has to move away from her hometown and how she processes those emotions. I can't believe this is a family movie. Like, I can't believe what they pulled off with this movie. This was when they sat around and had the infamous Pixar lunch where they sketched out the ideas.
The unmakeable movie.
Yeah, where they sketched out the ideas for the first four Pixar movies. This one was one that was mentioned and they said, it just can't be made. And eventually Pete Docter was like, yeah, but maybe I can make it. And he did. And it's amazing. So yeah, Inside Out, one of my favorites. So there you go.
Nice.
And that, you may guess, is streaming on Disney Plus.
What?
All right, let's talk about it, Andrew. What's your number one?
Inception.
Andrew has it at number one. I have it at number two. Low.
I had it at number four, I think. Three.
All right.
So I actually, Last Crusade and Inception tied with points for us. So
yeah,
those are
three,
both
2-1s. Yeah,
our top movies. So, the interesting thing I talked a little bit about Inception when we were talking about Interstellar, but I think the interesting thing about Inception is, while it is a movie that begs the audience to be fully immersed and fully focused on it, you know, it's not like a really a background watch movie. It somehow does pull off that kind of just. I've had friends who aren't really like into movies that you really have to focus on, and they still like Inception for the simple fact that some of the set pieces and some of the action sequences are so amazing and fun to look at. The Joseph Gordon-Levitt rotating hallway scene is like one of the best action scenes in cinema history, but it's scenes like those that make this movie, you know, they turn it up to 11 because... Or the Penrose step is one of my favorite things in the whole movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movie that kind of does what Infinite tried to do. Because if you think about it, in Infinite, this awful Marky Mark movie, the first hour of this movie is all exposition. Where, if you think about Inception, so is it. It's the same thing. A lot of this movie is explaining, you know, what is going on. But not only are they explaining it, Inception shows you. You know, like, they'll talk about it, but then at the same time, they're saying it, but they're showing you. Like, whenever, I forget what Ellen Page's new name. Elliot?
Yes. I think Elliot, yes.
Elliot Page, yeah, yeah. Whenever Elliot and Leonardo DiCaprio are sitting at the little coffee shop, and they're like, how did we get here?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, wait, are we dreaming? You know, it's moments like that where they're explaining it, but they're also showing you. And then she folds the entire city in half, you know, where they're showing you the limitless possibilities of what is, you know, capable. I would have killed to see, just sit there and see how the Nolan brothers came up with the idea for this movie. Because it's so far out there. That it just, like, you had to have spent so long planning this out to where it would even make sense.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where, what's their newest movie?
It was one of my favorite movies last year. Tenet.
Tenet. Yeah, that's where I think Tenet falls short, is because even like after multiple viewings, the movie can still be a little bit confusing as to the rules of this world and how they function. Whereas Inception, you can watch it the first time and have a pretty good idea, even with it being a high bar level of focus and understanding for the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kudos right there.
Yeah, I've loved Inception since the first time I watched it. It is brilliant filmmaking. And then I read an article about an Inception theory that just absolutely changed my watching the movie. And I watched it again and I was like, oh, this movie is even better than I thought. 'Cause whether or not that theory is correct, the fact that there are multiple interpretations of what's going on here, and yet it still makes sense, like you say. And when I say makes sense, I mean in a broad level makes sense. Although I think, you know, on a
you can follow the story arc.
Yeah, absolutely. And the rules make sense. You understand what the rules are. Whether or not you have a reliable narrator, that's a different, you know, different story.
But they tell you in the beginning of the movie that it's an unreliable narrator. You know, you know from the very get-go, you don't know if you can trust what Cobb sees.
Right.
Was the article you read the wedding ring?
No. It's not the wedding ring thing. It's the idea that I mean, it's not spoiling the movie because it's just a theory. But the idea, and also it's an older movie, so we have a little more grace with those kind of things. If you haven't seen Inception, see it. Feel free to fast forward a little bit if you want, but this isn't too much. The idea that Cobb is dreaming the whole movie, that we're one layer into dreams for the entire movie, and that Mal's correct, yes, and that Mal is really trying to save him, and he's the one in the wrong here, is mind-blowing when you watch it with that in mind, because it works. It absolutely works. And there's a moment where he's talking to his dad in the classroom, and you can almost feel that his dad, right? I didn't want to get that wrong. It's been a hot second, but
is it his? It's either his dad or hers. Ever... It's got to be his, right?
Yeah.
It's somebody's it's parent, somebody maybe an wrong. Uncle.
Yeah. Anyway, you know the scene I'm talking about, and you can just feel it in the way he's saying certain things to Cobb that he wants him, like he's trying to communicate, but they've been trying for so
long.
Back
to come back to reality.
Yeah, come back to us. Come back to us. Yeah. You know, like, and it's just like, man, how interesting that Nolan, if that was Nolan's intention, that he would be so dedicated to just letting that be in there and never bringing attention to it. And because he's very famously said, yes, the movie has an answer. This movie is about something, but I'm not here to tell you, you know, what it's about. And so, man, that's just so much respect for, you know, a storyteller that does that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
'Cause I remember whenever I first brought up the wedding ring theory.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And Chris from CinemaSins jumped on. He's like, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always thought that was funny. Because once he explained to me, it was like, oh, yeah, that's obviously wrong. That theory holds no weight at all.
Yeah.
But,
Lo, did you have anything you wanted to say about
it? Oh, I mean, I could just gush about this movie forever. I think that it has a spectacular script. Like it is the antithesis of Infinite. Like, we've already mentioned it, but it really does do all of the things that Infinite has a great idea. It has a great, like, foundation there. If they had just, I don't know, spent a little bit more time with the script, had a better writer, I don't, you know, maybe the direction had it fall apart, you know, as we were saying, we don't know, but I feel like Inception had everything go right. Like, this is the, when a movie is like, yes, everybody gave 110% and it turned out perfectly. It's so good.
So Michael Caine, I think, is who I'm talking about, right? It's the scene with Michael Caine, and he plays
Miles.
So is that a parent of somebody, or did I make that
up? I'm pretty sure that it is.
Well, he keeps calling him grandpa. Yeah. He keeps calling, like, as referring to the kids, like, refer to him as grandpa. So Lo's right. It's either his dad or Ma's dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. Let's do honorable mentions. I can go first. I've just got a couple. Incredibles 2, I really, really like. Wanted to mention that one. Into the Woods is a lot of fun. In the Line of Fire with Clint Eastwood is one of my favorite kind of old school movies. And then most recently, In and of Itself, the special that came out last year, the Derek Delgadio special, is also really, really awesome.
I don't know that one. Into the Wild.
Ooh. Yeah.
That's one we got to mention.
Mm-hmm. Good choice.
That is just a gorgeous movie. It's a gorgeous movie, and it's a harrowing, like, the more you realize, oh, wait, this is a true story, that just makes it that much more fascinating and sad, you know?
Lo, did you have any honorable mentions you wanted to throw out there?
I had three. Two of them were already on our list, Interstellar and Inside Out. But the other one is less of the fact that it's called Inside. It's not the Bo Burnham special. Partly because that's called Bo Burnham Inside.
Correct.
But it's with Emmy Rossum, and it is a, like, experimental... There is a movie cut. You can watch it as a movie, but I actually participated in it live. It was about, like, it was, like, on Facebook, and it was about this girl who got kidnapped, and she was, like, locked in her room, and she had... This is played by Emmy Rossum. And she had, like, a webcam and could, like, talk to people on Facebook. And, like, it was this live kind of, like, what is it called? Like, ARG sort of, like, thing where you're like, participating in it. And, like, people...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and, like, people were, like, figuring out where she was. So part of it is that I participated in it live. And I was, like, following the like, clues that we were given and how we were trying to figure out where she was and, like, how to, like, get the police to her and, like, all that sort of stuff. And there were, like... fake Facebook accounts for all of her friends and, like, all this stuff. And, like, admittedly, it's not as, like, a movie cut. It's not amazing as a movie cut, but, like, that experience of being able to experience it live is, like, something that I look back on very fondly. So I always think about it a lot, but.
Oh, nice. Good call. Good call. All right, let's move on to our buried treasure for the week. Andrew, why don't you kick us off? What's your buried treasure?
It's actually been out for a little bit now, but season 2 of Love, Death, and Robots.
Yeah.
I will say I like season 1 a lot more than season 2.
Agree.
But there were a couple shorts in this that I thought were really fascinating, particularly I forget the actual name of it, but it was the one with no newborn children. I think that was my favorite one. And the discovery of immortality, and therefore children don't need to be born anymore. I thought that was a fascinating one. Also, I think the first one's fun. Mm-hmm. You know, the first one with the devil Roomba.
Yeah.
But none of them. I feel like I'm nagging on my buried treasure, but I do think that the whole premise of Love, Death, and Robots is fascinating. It's an animated version, and maybe a more ridiculous Black Mirror. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the best. There's also a higher level of sci-fi attached to it.
Yeah,
but there's also enough within these stories that are accessible that you can understand, or, you know, easily pick out the bare front message, at least the metaphorical message that it's trying to get across.
Yeah, the one I found most affecting was The Drowned Giant. And that one I thought...
Was that the one with the whales?
Yeah. No, it's the...
I like that
it's
one.
It's the one with the giant that washes up, the giant human that washes up on shore.
Oh, yeah. For some reason, I was thinking of the second one where they're, like, running across the ice.
The one you were talking about is called Pop Squad. And then Automated Customer Service was the first one that you were mentioning. The other one I really liked was All Through the House. I just thought it was really cute and clever. That's kind of the Christmas one where...
Oh, yeah.
But the thing I always come away from these thinking about is technology and just how incredible some of this stuff is. You know, the Life Hutch, which was the one that had Michael B. Jordan in it, somehow didn't have Michael B. Jordan in it, but had Michael B. Jordan in it. It's just like technology. we're almost there. Like, we almost have the Uncanny Valley in our rearview mirror, and it's going... It, to say it's going to change things is such an understatement, because you will, I mean, let's just keep it in the world of entertainment. But if you go beyond the world of entertainment, our world is about to change in some pretty scary ways.
Would you say that the changes could be infinite?
I was thinking today, sorry, I always end up getting too deep, but I was thinking today that we may be the last generation to have been privileged enough to have lived completely in the era of truth and the idea of knowing something and having it backed up. You know, because there is this idea that we just won't know what the idea of proving something via video or sound or any, it's just going to be gone within the next couple decades. Yeah. And it's just, man, we are going to miss that foundation, and we're going to have to figure out ways to exist without it. Sorry to get too deep and philosophical on you. That's just what I do. Anyhow, on an entertainment level, it's going to change things.
Whenever you're watching a show like Black Mirror or Love, Death, and mm-hmm. Robots, these are the thoughts that, you know, mm-hmm. come to your mind.
Yeah. So, well, and yeah. In this case, it's about just the technology and the ability for them to do the things they're doing here. So, yeah, it's pretty incredible stuff. I'm gonna blow Andrew's mind. My buried treasure is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Dang it! I was gonna. Okay. Here's the thing.
What's happening?
Here's the thing. I saw Singing in the Rain.
Did you?
And
really?
I was waiting, because I was like, the week that Aaron does The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, I was going to come in and swoop in and say, oh, I saw The Singing in the Rain. So,
nice.
So I'll do it next week.
All right. Fair enough. I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Okay, Aaron.
This movie is terrible. Just kidding. This movie is amazing. I really did enjoy it. Now, I'm not a Western person. By the way, in case you aren't familiar with what Andrew and I are talking about, neither of us had seen each other's number one favorite movie of all time. So he hadn't seen Singing in the Rain. I hadn't seen The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I'm kind of working my way through some classics that I haven't seen. And I finally got up to 66, 67, whenever this came out.
67 is when this one came out.
And so I watched it, and as somebody who's not generally a Western fan, and many of the Westerns I've been watching, I haven't, liked, man, I don't know how you don't like this. Clint Eastwood is just so good in this role, and the final scene is so amazing. Like, there are moments getting up to that final scene where maybe I was a little bit, not bored, I was never bored, but maybe I was just like a little bit, okay, let's move this along, like for a split second or so.
It's a long movie.
It's a long movie. But once you get to that final scene and you start to understand, you know, the payoffs and how it's going to happen, and there's an entire movie that happens in the last, you know, half hour of this movie. There's probably three entire movies that happen in the last half hour of this this movie. Yeah. It's brilliant. It's really brilliant. It's really well done. So yeah, I really, really liked it. Nice. So there you go.
Oh man. I was going to send Phil, I was this week, I was going to send Phil a message saying, hey, let me know whenever Aaron does The Good, because I knew you would do it. I'm like, if Aaron ever has The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly as his buried treasure, let me know so I can do Singing in the Rain.
That's amazing.
I'll do it next week.
Lo, you're our guest, so you get to finish. What's your buried treasure?
My buried treasure, thinking about musicals, since we talked about it in the pre-show, and obviously we had In the Heights, is Hadestown, which I believe premiered on Broadway in 2019. I'm more just talking about the soundtrack, because that's like accessible to everybody, but it was mm-hmm. supposed to start going on tour before COVID. We'll see, you know, if I think it might have already announced it's going back on tour, but I know it's coming back to Broadway. If you are unfamiliar, it is always the show that I recommend to people when they tell me that they love Hamilton and they've never been a musical fan and they are looking for something that is maybe similar but not exactly the same. Hadestown is also a sung through musical, so if you listen to this, you're getting the entire story, just like with Hamilton. Except instead of being about history, it is about Greek mythology. It tells the story of Orpheus and Eurydice, which, if you're familiar, it is the walking out of hell and not looking back story. And then also the story of Hades and Persephone, who Persephone, again, if you're sort of familiar, is the character in Greek mythology that would go back and forth between the real world and the underworld, and that's where we get the seasons of, it would be winter when she was gone, because I think she was a goddess of like spring, I want to say. The interesting thing about this musical is that it is told in jazz . Yeah, and the aesthetic of it is that they set it in this kind of like I would say like an oil town of almost like Prohibition era, this sort of like Louisiana vibes coming in there. There's definitely some like New Orleans influence on the music. It's a very funky, like it's not a hip hop musical. So, you know, you're moving into something different, but it is different than your stereotypical like musical, Broadway musical. So it is amazing. It makes me cry. I think it's a really great one to listen to if you're familiar with Hamilton, because you can get the entire story without having to actually watch it if you are somebody who likes to do that.
There you go.
You know what it sounds like to me? It sounds kind of like O Brother, Where Art
Very
Thou?
Much.
Because O Brother, Where Art Thou is based on Greek, the Odyssey, which is set, you know, during the Great Depression. But this is like a New Orleans as opposed to a Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Did you say you can like see it somewhere streamed?
I was mostly talking about this. There are, again, I feel like every time I talk about musicals, you can find bootlegs. Also coming on tour. I was so excited before COVID. I was going to see it. We were going to get tickets, and then everything shut down. So hopefully when it starts touring again, be able to actually see it. But I have seen it, hint, hint, you know, nudge, nudge, a blurry
wink, wink, nudge,
version
nudge
of it.
Say no more, say no more.
But the difference here is that it is, unlike with O Brother, Where Art Thou, this is not a like... this is all real world. It's not real world. They are still gods. They are still going to hell.
Okay.
It just takes place in this kind of modern comparatively, more modern world than you would think.
They're referred to as gods as opposed to
They are definitely, you know, gods and men and going to hell and all that sort of stuff. But there's a lot of really great... like political commentary. There's a song called Why We Build the Wall, because in this the river Styx is a wall as opposed to like a river. It's like a wall that's made out of stones. And like that song was like a lot of people talked about it in 2019 as being like one of the best songs to come out of Broadway. And like there's just Wait For Me. If you're looking to get a taste of the feel, you can look up their Tony performance. They won a million Tonys. They won, they like swept everything that they were nominated for. Maybe not swept, but they did really good. They won best musical and all that stuff. Yeah. But their Tony performance of the song Wait For Me is fantastic. I really can't recommend it enough if you're somebody who's not a huge musical fan, but you kind of like some of the more like off the beaten path musicals. It's absolutely one that I recommend.
Nice. That's Hades Town.
I'm definitely going to look it up.
Hades Town.
It sounds fascinating.
I'm so ready for Broadway to be back. I don't even live in New York City, and I'm ready
for Broadway
to be back.
It's all the touring shows to come, because I'm in Orange County. Everything comes here. I'm lucky that way.
That's right. There you go. We did it, guys. We did a podcast.
Woo!
Congratulations to all of us. We have succeeded in our goals. Thank you so much for joining us today. Sif Pop, it is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. If you want to find out about other shows on the network, you can go to studiodna.media, or you can search Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to Phil for producing the audio and video show. Thanks to... That almost sound like a car horn. Roadrunner, maybe. Thanks to Drew for putting together the visuals for the week.
Big clap.
And thank you to our guest this week. It is Lo.
Thank you for
being here.
A blast as always.
What do you want to promote? Where do you want to send people? What do you want
to
tell people?
I'm mostly always just hanging out on Twitter at The Curious Lo, ranting about musicals. Musicals, movies. You'll see a lot of Star Wars from me over there. See a lot of tweets about how miserable I am in pregnancy currently. That's been my life.
Possibly a little bit A little bit of Jonas Brothers.
Every once
in
a while, they sneak in. Yeah.
Yes, please follow Lo on Twitter at The Curious Lo. Much love and gratitude to our SifPop members as well for making SifPop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month, and you can check out the different levels and how to get access to all the bonus episodes, as well as many other fun perks at patreon.com/SifPop. If you want to connect with the podcast, you can do that by helping us out through a comment, a rating, or a review. Wherever you listen to the podcast, that would be helpful. You can also email us, feedback@sifpop.com, if you have any questions or comments. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like it too, so let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than deflecting a bullet with a steel plate in your skull. We will be back next week with Luca and the Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard. Going to be an interesting week next week, and we will see you then.
Bye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.